Give us a little bit of kind of an update on where you are in the study. I guess it'll be fully released in about a year or so. Is that true?
Yeah, well, it's a six-year study, and we're just in the sixth and final year of data collection. And so we're starting to come out with publications from the study now, and they'll be coming out for the next couple of years.
What are the takeaways so far?
Yeah, some of the big ones are how dynamic bears are and how they select for human development and urban habitat. It's kind of been this perception that people thought, you know, once bears discover human food, they're always going to use it. And what we found is really different than that, that in tracking the same bears over time, we see bears really dynamically select for human foods based on when they need them. So they'd much rather use natural foods if they could. But they'll if there's not much food in any given year in the forest, they'll really switch, start using human development really as a source of subsidy. And then they'll switch back when there's natural foods available to them.
Hmm. And I've heard that they are smart enough to figure out which houses in the neighborhood have a reliable food source, aren't, you know, securing their trash cans. They have a memory.
They have an incredible memory, and they're incredibly long-lived. I mean, we've got collared bears that are up to 28 years old. We get a really good age from them. We pull a little tooth, and a lot of large mammals in temperate climates put down a ring of cementum on their teeth, so you can count those rings and get a really good age estimate, kind of like it rings on a tree. So, yeah, we've got several bears over 20 years old, and then our real old girl of 28.
What's their average lifespan?
In the wild, it's probably about 10 years-ish is pretty good. It depends on how heavily bears are hunted. But really, any bear older than 10 or 12 in the wild is pretty old, especially in a harvested population.
Wow, considered a survivor at the very least.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a senior citizen.
And that's one of our bears that loves to live right downtown.
Right downtown. Yeah. Were there any surprises that have come up in this study, something you really weren't expecting to learn?
I mean, part of it was just how dynamic bear behavior really is. We've got bears that live up in the La Platas that will come down all the way to Durango to forage on human foods right before hibernation. So that's been a bit of a surprise. We fortunately have been running the study over a long enough time to get a natural food failure year. So for us, 2012 was a year when there was almost nothing for bears to eat in the wild. And so we were able to see what was happening in terms of population size before that food failure and then after it. And we've seen about a 40% decrease in the population size spanning kind of pre and post that food failure. So we just didn't know how much those food failures could really influence the size of our bear population. And we've seen just incredibly dramatic, you know, results from that.
How many bears are part of this six-year study?
We mark with collars a subset of adult females. So our goal is to always have at least 40 bears that are collared for the study. And then any bear that we catch, we also mark for the study. So right now we have marked about 380 different bears. All bears get a little black ear tag. And if folks see a bear with a black ear tag in town, if it's the tags in the left ear, it's a female. If it's in the right ear, it's a male. Yeah, so we track those fates of those animals over time, if they come in, if they're harvested, if they're hit on the road. But then in real detail, we track our sample of about 40 females each year. We collect a location every hour from them as these collars are collecting data really 24/7.
They're sending back GPS coordinates?
Yeah, it's most of the data is collected on the collar. And so every hour they get a GPS point. And then about every 6 hours, they email me a location in real time. So so if I look at my Gmail account, I'm getting 3 or 4 emails per day from 40 different bears. Tell me where they're at.
That's amazing. How large of a geographic area is the study encompassing?
We catch bears only within about 6 miles as the crow flies of town.
So the study area doesn't include deep into the La Platas or up on Missionary Ridge too far then?
Not unless a bear goes there. So if we collar a bear in town, that's what's happened. We've collared these bears in town and then we get to see where they go. Sometimes back to the Platas. We've got one bear that goes about 10 miles up Hermosa Creek. Most bears stick pretty tight around town, but then a few of them travel. We had a bear that went down to New Mexico for a year and then came back, right back to Edgemont where she was collared.
Honed right back in on her original location then.
Absolutely, yeah. She went about 150 miles as the crow flies for a year and a half down in New Mexico. And then she came right back with 2 cubs in tow and they all made it.
I know that depending on the elevation, their hibernation period is either short or long. What's the average hibernation period for a bear that resides roughly in the Durango area?
Yeah, most of them go down about the 1st of November and then come out about first, second week of April. Depends if they have cubs. Bears that have cubs come out a little later in April.
What's it like being in the field working with an animal that instills certainly respect, awe, and fear in so many people?
Yeah. You know, what's amazing about Durango is that the people here love their bears. Very few people are scared of bears in Durango. It's pretty amazing. We've done these public surveys, and we found that over 90% of residents report that having bears on the landscape is at least somewhat to very important to them. In terms of working with bears, they're incredibly gentle and really predictable. We've done about 890 bear captures over the last 5 years, and we've never had a bear charge a staff member. We've never had any issues. We have no injuries of, you know, anything happening to any kind of staff member associated with the bear captures. If the bears just want really away from us, they want to get in dense cover. They want to be left alone.
We're talking to Heather Johnson, a wildlife researcher with Colorado Parks and Wildlife, about her 5-year study on bears and bear-human interactions in the Durango area. The study's in its fourth year. Heather, describe a bear trapping, if you will.
Yeah, so we catch bears two times a year. We catch them in the summer, and that's how we initially put the collars on. So we've got, on any given night, about 15 bear traps set around Durango. We set them in the evening, check them in the morning, and that's how we catch bears for the first time. And then for our collared sample, we track those bears to their dens in the winter. And then we actually go to the dens, we check on reproduction, whether those sows have cubs, whether their cubs survive the first year of life. And then we change out the batteries on the collars and download all the data. We're doing these kind of summer captures for the first time to catch bears, and then these winter captures as kind of our kind of annual maintenance, both on the collar and to just keep track of a sow over time and what happens with her.
And of course, this is somewhat rugged work in the woods. There's a picture online of you, pretty muddy, little scuffed up, holding a drugged out bear.
Yeah. The summer captures are really predictable. A bear's in a trap. Everyone's, you know, it's really predictable. The bear's safe in the trap. The staff can, we can take our time outside of the trap. The winter captures, though, are a lot less predictable because you're crawling into a den. You don't know what the space looks like, how big it is. We often don't know how many bears are in the den. So it's, you know, the winter captures for us are definitely the time we're kind of put to the test a little more, and we've got to really trust our fellow staff members. And if you're being dropped down a hole and your staff is holding you by the feet, you know, you have to know that if you kick your legs, they're going to pull you out really fast.
They could come awake suddenly, I take it, if you make too much noise interfering. Is that correct?
Yeah, bears, they're called not true hibernators. So their body temperature, just usually it's like ours. And then when they're hibernating, it's just about 90 degrees. So it just drops a little bit. And that's so they can react really fast if something comes into their den. So by the time we've dug out the snow out of the way of an entrance and we're climbing in, a bear is usually, she's up, she's sitting up, she's got her head up, she's looking at us.
Waiting for whatever's
waiting.
Coming in. Yeah.
Sometimes she's jaw-popping and swiping at the jab pole. Sometimes they're a little sleepier, but usually they're awake by the time we're going in.
Any other data from this research proving to be particularly interesting?
I mean, one of the interesting things that, in addition, we're collecting a lot of data on bears, but we're also collecting a lot of data on people. We have a whole other kind of part of the study that's really collecting data on people and how human development and expanding human development and human behavior also contributes to this issue of bear-human conflicts. We know, you know, from the bear side of things, we're trying to understand, is the bear population changing? Are bears changing their behavior? But from the human side of things, we're also wondering, you know, what people are doing to potentially contribute to this issue. And one of the things that we've done as part of this is do a big bear-proofing experiment in Durango, where we've deployed about 1,100 bear-resistant trash cans in two different treatment areas, and we also have control areas. And we're looking to see if we do things like change waste management practices, can we reduce bear-human conflicts? The interesting thing as part of our study, one of the things that we've found is that folks say that they don't comply with wildlife ordinances because it's too expensive to buy a bear can. So we gave people bear cans, and what we're finding as we collect data on people in the system, not just the bears, but the people, is that we can only get about a third to up to maybe 40% of folks to actually use their bear cans.
So even though they're given one, they still use the old-fashioned trash can that a bear can get into easily?
Well, they still use the bear can, they just won't lock it.
What's next for the study? And then once it's done, what comes of it then?
This winter, when we go to the dens, we'll pull all the collars off. And all these bears that have given us this tremendous data set over the last few years, they'll just be free and clear to go about their business. And then we have a lot of work to do to analyze the data and to publish the results of the study.
Heather Johnson is a wildlife researcher with the Colorado Division of Parks and Wildlife and specializes in bears and has been part of a multi-year bear study around the Durango area. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.